And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, right in the middle of your work week. Wednesday, September the 19th, 2018, 11 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program, and I want to get right into the program today because we have a lot of housekeeping to take care of right off the bat here. And we have our regular monthly visit from the Queen, the Maven of Helpful Hints, Heloise. So I want to get right to Heloise after we get this housekeeping taken care of. So we're going to do this as quick as possible. Coming up later on today on the program at 1:10 p.m., we're going to be joined by legendary comedian. You remember him from the Johnny Carson Show, the Jack Parr Show. Orson Bean will be with us in hour number two. And if you have been to the movie theaters recently, he appears in the feature film, The Equalizer 2. Orson Bean, hour number two today. Now, coming up tomorrow, have you been interested in the political scene? Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But tomorrow at 1:10, we're going to address a very serious question in the political scene. Do you remember all the talk last week about that anonymous letter that was sent to the New York Times from somebody inside the presidential cabinet campaign? We really don't know where it came from. And that's the question. That's why tomorrow at 1:10, we're going to have another man who is a good friend of this show, regular visitor, but was also famous for his appearances with Johnny Carson and David Letterman and Sally Jesse Raphael. He's still out there doing shows. The only man who may know the answer to who sent this anonymous letter, the amazing Kreskin, tomorrow at 1:10. Now, and here's a big tease for you. After we talk to the amazing Kreskin, at 1:30 tomorrow, we just confirmed with a guest who has never been on this program, a big, big, big-time guest. We've talked about this person a lot on this station, and tomorrow they'll be making their first visit with us at 1:30. Just confirmed it seconds ago. So look for that tomorrow. And next Thursday, very quickly, the last guard out of Alcatraz Prison, Jim Albright, will be coming to Marion to do a presentation about Alcatraz Prison. He'll be doing that at the Harding High School. That event is brought to you by this radio station. It will be at 7 p.m., September 27th. Jim Albright, he wears the uniform. He was the last guard out of Alcatraz Prison. He's got pictures. He'll answer questions. He'll be on the radio with us here next Thursday from 10 until 2, and then the big presentation at Harding High School at 7 p.m. And as a thank you to the listeners, that event next Thursday night at 7 p.m. is absolutely free. Free admission. So, there is our housekeeping. I think I've got it all cleared up. And now we are going to go to one of my favorite guests. I'm so glad she's a regular. It seems like it's been too long since she's been on. 4 weeks have passed, and we're so glad to welcome back to this program to discuss recipes today. As I say, she is the Maven of Helpful Hints. Her name is synonymous with how to fix things, how to do things the right way. Heloise. Heloise, I'm out of breath. Let's go. Here we go.
Well, good. You're out of breath and you're on radio?
I am. I'm all that housekeeping there,
which I thought was a cute segue into what to you introducing me.
Yes, because you know about housekeeping and how to keep the place looking right.
Yes, absolutely.
But you said something I think in one of our recent talks that I thought was interesting, that the people who come into your house really don't pay attention to the stuff you do.
You know, we've talked about this before, and they're generally there to see you. And my saying is, if someone comes to your home, they're a guest in your home, and they say, well, you know, there's a little dust on the end table, hand them a dust rag.
Have them pitch in.
Of course. It's one, that would be very rude. But it's as my mother used to, my mother was the original Heloise, and, you know, she started the column in 1959, a military housewife, where your home really was your job. Most women did not work at that time. And that was your job, and your full-time job was to take care of the house and take care of the family and things like that. But things are different today. Most of us work full-time, part-time. Even if you aren't working, if you may have 2 to 3 kids, 2 to 3 grandkids, life is too important to worry about dust on the end table.
I think you're right. I when I have guests in, they don't pay attention to that sort of thing.
And if they do, that is their problem.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not advocating living in filth, mind you, but it's important to remember that it's more enjoyable to be relaxed. Let your guests, they'll know if you're nervous and the whole thing. So it's just do the best that you can. And I always say, pick up the big chunks. And our dear friend Irma Bombeck did the cutest thing, and she was a close friend of mine, that she always said, she wrote a column about it, kind of made a joke about it, but I said, Irma, and she said, oh, I did when I was first married, that she always kept the vacuum cleaner with a dust rag over the handle, like somewhere in the corner of the living room, so if her mother-in-law dropped by unexpectedly, she could say, oh, I was just getting ready to vacuum. Isn't that darling?
You know, Irma was classic. She was just one of a kind.
She truly, truly was. And I'll tell you, let me do a short little story of how we became friends. Is she sent me a letter, and we had not known each other at that time. And a lot of newspapers would put her column and my column on the same page, along with Ann or Addie, kind of thing. And this has happened before, and some paper mixed up our pictures, so they put my picture on Irma's column and her picture on mine. And somebody had sent it to her. She sent it on to me, and she said, Dear Heloise, you got the short end of the stick. And I thought, I have to meet this woman. And we became fast friends. And I learned a lot from her. Humor in life is very important. And when things go wrong, now not serious, awful things, but, you know, when things go wrong and you're fixing dinner or you're something or other and the whatever it is didn't turn out, she's like, just laugh at it. She said, if you laugh at yourself first, everyone else will follow.
You know, so many people today do not have a good sense of humor. I think most people have some, but it is less likely that people seem so tense, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. They seem very tense about everything.
Yes. Yes. And a lot of it has to do with the times and what's going on. And I understand that. We need to pay attention. But it's try to find at least once a day. Once a day, it's very easy to do something that is funny, something that is humorous, that you can laugh at. And then it makes the rest of the day go okay.
You're right. And you know, meditation has become a big thing. I know so many people now who I would not think get up in the morning 20 minutes earlier than they normally do, and they meditate. They concentrate on a word and clear their mind, and they say it recharges their batteries in the morning.
can. It certainly can. I do yoga and have for, let's just say, since I was in college. Not going to tell you how many years. But there is a time, and with so much that's going on, and with all of the electronics that we have, and cell phones, and this and that and everything, your brain just kind of gets fried. And so there are times that it's okay to, like, stop, calm your brain, take a few minutes. When I'm on book tour, which I did like 27 or something, I mean, the day just is like, and everybody's asking questions. I have been known to, I don't know, I probably shouldn't say this on radio. Oh, what the heck. Go into the ladies' room, put the lid down if there is one, sit on the commode to be calm and quiet, because I figure nobody can get me there.
Well, that's one place they won't find you.
Except for, I've had them follow me into the ladies' room and stand at the stall door.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And I'm like, can you give me a minute? So, but it's, you know, sort of part of what I do, but just find some place in your home, maybe in your office, even if you have to walk out or can walk outside for a few minutes, that you can just go and kind of calm your brain, think of something happy. When I get highly, I used to, my mother started the column in Hawaii. My father was an Air Force colonel, a pilot, and we lived in Hawaii. It was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And truly, I can take 5 minutes and think about being in Hawaii, hearing the ocean surf, hearing, I hate to sound like a cliche in that song, but the palm trees swaying. And it's enough, it transports me to happy land, and it's enough to calm me down.
And a calm person is a much happier person.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And so my hint for you today is, you know, take a few moments, take a couple deep breaths, calm your brain, and then you can go back out and do the things that need to be taken care of.
I think you're right, and I think if we get there, I think we'll all be in better shape.
Well, I hope so. You know, we now know, medical community has told us, you know, how much stress truly, constant stress is bad for your health. It's okay. And laughter, again, the medical community now knows, you know, laughter, I mean, a good belly laugh can help you. It can help your circulation, kind of calm some of those nerves. So think in terms of something that's funny.
You know, I've always thought about this. No matter how sick you might be, no matter how much pain you might be in, if you genuinely laugh at something, for that moment, you cannot feel any other emotion.
Probably so.
Because it's involuntary.
Oh, I haven't thought about that. You know what? You're right.
Yeah. So it's interesting that laughter, the emotion, tops all other emotions, which is interesting because I don't think we genuinely laugh. We've come to learn where laugh lines should be put in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't start me on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Where, you know, and it's the ha-ha-ha. And you can always tell it's a little forced.
Yeah. It's real laughter. What I love is when you're laughing so hard and you can't stop and you get little tears in your eyes.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like, that's a good laugh. And it really does help you. So even at the worst of times, and there are times I'll tell my husband, you know, whatever, not something horrible, but, well, in fact, remember the movie Trains, Planes, and...
Oh.
Trains, Planes, and something else.
Automobiles.
Automobiles. We were coming back from L.A. Everything was canceled. It was this and that. And we literally we got to Salt Lake City. And the connections and the whole thing. And I called my travel agent. She said, well, there's a train out of there. And I was like, okay. I haven't been on a train since I was a kid. So, well, it's overnight, and I've got you, you know. And I said, and of course, all night. You think, well, we'll go to the dining car. How about a tuna fish sandwich? And I'm like, David, we're going to laugh at this later. Maybe not right now, but we're going. And we do. We tell the story now, and it's absolutely hysterical.
Isn't it funny how the more uncomfortable you are, the more dangerous a situation? When you tell that story a month later, it's a comedic story.
Yes.
But not at the time.
No, not at the time, no.
No. So it's just one of those things, and I've come to believe this, that all comedy comes from tragedy.
It may take a while, but probably so.
I think it's right, because even at the worst moments, which most people think are funerals, something bizarre always happens that later on you laugh about.
Oh, absolutely. There was a, I think it was Mel Brooks had written something, and he was talking about, I can't remember whose funeral, it was like a fellow comedian or something, and he said, now maybe this story is not true or not, I'm not sure, but he said, you know, we're all in the synagogue, and they all have the yarmulkes on, and somebody opened a window, and or something, a gust of wind, I can't remember the details, and all the yarmulkes flew off their heads and were rolling on the floor. And everybody, they're trying to stifle the laughter. And somebody said, it's Mel! everybody started laughing.
Well, that, you know, and the giggles, I don't know what causes the giggles, but it again, it's involuntary because you try to stop them, but you can't.
Oh, you can't. No, absolutely. And no, you can't. You try, of course, which makes it worse.
Yep, the harder you try, the worse it is.
See, now you've got me started.
Well, and I have been around people. This usually happens in plays, and somebody can read a line all week in rehearsal and be fine with it. And then when they do it, there's something about it that hits them funny, mm-hmm. and they can't get the line out.
Oh, I've seen it also. And even sometimes when I'm on television, you know, you hang out in the green room and you meet people and kind of chat and everything, and you may share some stories. And then you're on live TV, and in the back of your brain, that story is there. And you're thinking, okay, don't laugh. And you just start, which is okay. That's why I always tell people, is that no matter the situation, most everyone has probably been through something similar. They're not going to take your birthday away, although there are times I wish they would. And after one gets past a certain age, but they're not going to take your birthday away. And just laugh as much as you can. And it truly will, I believe, kind of like open your heart.
I would say I think it opens you up to a lot of things. And I was just thinking, Heloise, one of the things we talked about in our last conversation, which some people thought was funny, but it was a true statement about jeans. Do you remember this, blue jeans?
No.
Oh, yeah. Last time we talked, I brought up that I had read an article at one point that stated...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
You should...
That you should never wash your blue jeans. I find the article for me, okay?
I will do that.
Being as a Texas gal, now, if the jeans, if you only wear, here's what I do in my office, you know, I tell my staff, okay, research. So if you only wear the jeans once a week to go shopping or go have lunch or something or other, that might work for about a year or two. But if you're here in Texas and you wear them, you know, three times a week and you're out slopping the hogs or taking care of the cows, I think they need to be washed.
Well, I would think, or you're not going to have many friends. There's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So that was one of those things. I don't know. I do know that a lot of people always are worried about once you get a nice pair of jeans and you like them and they're comfortable, a lot of people get worried that they will spill something on them and they can't get the stain out and so on and so forth. This is a big problem.
Well, it can be. It can be. It depends on the jeans. And, you know, they do have fabric protector. Well, I normally don't mention companies or brand names, but it used to be Scotchgard, and they changed the formula. I think it's still available, and you can spray. It's better to spray several light coats on the garment, the cushions on the sofa. Let it dry, then another coat. Let it dry, then like three, and that really does act as a water, etc., repellent. So if something does drop on it, you know, you're having a fabulous hot dog or a greasy barbecue sandwich, it's less likely to stain, and so that when you wash it, it'll come off.
You know, that just reminded me of when people used to leave the cushion covers on their furniture.
You mean the plastic?
The plastic. Never came off. And when you went to those people's houses, when you sat down,
the crinkly sound.
Oh, it was awful. And you felt uncomfortable.
And you know, there's a couple TV shows, sitcoms, and some others that are throwbacks. One of them did that, and I was like, oh, my gosh, please don't do it. Could you show that? Because then people are going to do that. Here's the Halloween hint. Don't do that. It's not necessary. If you get a stain on one side, just turn the darn cushion over, and you've got a whole new clean side.
Well, that's true. I don't know. I think that has went out. I have not seen that for a long time.
I hope so.
Yeah. But I kept thinking, when is the monsoon going to come through this living room?
Yes.
It just didn't make any sense to me. I don't know. Couch covers make a lot more sense. Maybe that put that whole plastic idea out to pasture.
Yes. And I'll tell you one better is that a friend who shall remain nameless. Three or four of us from college went to visit, and the house was immaculate. I mean, absolutely immaculate. And unfortunately, that you could not go into the living room, the formal living room. And we're kind of wandering around, and our friend is like, no, no, don't go in there, don't go in there. And she had, the lady of the house had white carpeting, which, folks, don't get white carpeting. You know, especially if you really don't want anybody to visit you. And she had plastic runners, just like you're talking about, all through the house because of the white carpeting. And in my brain, I was trying to think, well, what were you thinking when you got it in the first place? So part of, in the Kitchen with Heloise book, I was thumbing through it yesterday, kind of doing a little prep for our show today, and I looked at Norma, one of my assistants, and I said, you know, I had forgotten how good this book is, because I wrote it, who knows, 15 years ago, because it's a hybrid. Yes, there are a lot of Heloise, my mother's recipes, and a couple recipes from my friends and everything, but the other half of the book is like a textbook or an informational book of telling you if you're setting up your kitchen, maybe, you know, these are the minimum number of tools that you need. If the minimum, here's what you need. You know, you need a good pot, you need a good pan, you need a good carving knife. And I thought, you know, people don't tell you the basics today. I mean, there are a lot of websites and the whole thing, but, and I looked at her and I said, I'll tell you what, I can always tell a new male divorcee when I'm at the grocery store. They've got their grocery cart. There's one frying pan, one spatula, a lot of chips, and one Melmac plate, and a knife and a fork and a spoon. They think that's going to be enough to set up their kitchen. I can spot them an aisle away.
You know what I've had trouble with? This points me in this direction. I cannot find a can opener that's any good to save my life.
Why?
I don't know. I think I'm jinxed in this whole thing. Because I had a can opener, and I was using it, and something happened to the knob. And I need to replace this. So I go out and I get another can
now
opener.
Now, I'm going to put my Heloise hat
on. Sure.
Are you talking electric can opener that is on the wall or the kind that you use by hand?
By hand.
Oh.
Yeah. So maybe I need to get an electric one. Maybe that's the whole problem here.
Because they aren't that expensive.
Well, no. And
it'll save you a lot of trouble.
Well, where? I can't even find them in the store.
But the hand ones?
Yeah.
Huh. They're out there.
They have to be.
Yeah. But again, now that's an example of many times we keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. Not that anything's wrong, but it's because, well, that's the way we've always done it. And my favorite story, similar, is the third generation, when they, Sunday, you know, after church, the big pot roast, and the family comes over, and the woman had always cut the end off the roast, cooked it in a separate pot, and then did the pot roast in the big one. And the granddaughter came to the mom and said, well, to mother, why do we do this? And the mother said, well, I don't know. My mother always did it. So they go to grandma that started this tradition and said, why do we cut the end off the pot roast and put it in a smaller pot and then do the big one? And she said, I never had a pot big enough to cook the whole roast in. So take a look at what you're doing. And 9 times out of 10, there's always a way to either improve it. And there's a saying, my brother is a aeronautical mechanical engineer. And I love him dearly, but you know what they say about engineers. They're right. You ask them what time it is, and they tell you how to make a watch. And he kept saying, well, you know, people keep doing things over and over and over again, and that's the definition of insanity. And, like, meaning you do the same thing repeatedly, expecting different results. And I stopped him one day, and I said, wait a minute, Lewis. As an engineer, when you're testing a jet engine, don't you test it a bunch of times? Well, yeah, that's different. I'm like, no, it's not. So take a look at what you're doing in the kitchen. And you may just, and again, put your Heloise hat on. Step back for a second. Assess the situation. And you may see, this is the most efficient. This is that will save me the most money or time. But then you suddenly say, you know, I could eliminate this step, and it's going to cut a little time off of it. So, and I really always try to say, you know, don't be intimidated. Have fun in the kitchen. Really, really do. It's again, they're not going to take your birthday away. And if you make a mistake, or the cake doesn't turn out well, or the pie doesn't turn out well, or the gravy has lumps in it. Oh, I've got one for lumpy gravy. Buy the stuff in the jar. No. It's all right.
Well, here's what I think it is with me, personality-wise, when it comes to this can opener issue. Now, I am not opposed to an electric can opener, but...
You are so funny.
No, this is what I think. Because, you know, there are products that are easier. Like, let's say, shoes. Now, you can get Velcro shoes. But when I see people with Velcro shoes, I think laces too difficult. So, with a candle...
You mean Velcro enclosures, not Velcro shoes.
Right, the, you know, Velcro to fasten the shoe.
Yes, okay.
And I always think to myself, because for a long time I had this idea when it came to Velcro shoes that people could not bend over to tie the laces. But then I thought, you got to bend over to fasten the Velcro. So then I think, well, are laces too difficult? Is that why we're with the Velcro? I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about adults.
Right.
And I think that I feel the same way about the can opener. If somebody gave me an electric can opener,
yes,
I'd be happy to use it.
Yeah.
But it's not a can is only so wide in circumference that I think I should be able to turn that knob to get that lid off. But I can't.
These
yes.
You're overthinking this.
Well,
make your life easier, and you're overthinking that one. It's now the thing with the Velcro as a closure, say on shoes and tennis shoes and those kind of things. You have to consider the person may have arthritis; they may not be able to thread the lace through the eyelets. They may not be able to pull it tight and do a bow or not. They may have arthritis in their hands. So there may be something like that.
Well, I think there are reasons for it. I just think to sell that amount of Velcro shoes, I think there's just some complacency. I don't know. That's just my belief on that.
Scott?
Yes?
You're welcome to believe that, but as your friend, Heloise, let it go. Make your life easier, enjoyable.
Well, I think you're right, because the can thing is probably in anxiety taking years off my life. I'm sure of this. So, but yet, I always go back when the thing breaks, because I've went through three, like in the last 2 years, and I think that's abnormal. And so when one breaks, I try to go to a different brand. I try to pay a little more for it because I think it's going to be better. And they just don't work right. I don't know what the thing is. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what. I heard you at the top of the hour talking about the upcoming shows and the presentation with Orson Bean and stuff like that. You figure how to get me up there, and I'll do a Heloise house call to your home or apartment. Are you married?
No.
Oh. Well, then I'll do a Heloise house call, and we'll just do a walk through your kitchen. Actually, I'm going to ask you to take a couple photos and email them to me.
Well,
I will help you, Scott.
I think the kitchen looks okay. Wouldn't that be great? If you and I could get together, boy, I could just be, I'd be running right, because clearly I've got issues.
Well, there are more important things in life to worry about and take care of. But, however, when I was doing one of my books, and I was editing it, the final edits on it, which is excruciating, by the way, I thought, you know, it's important to, and this is what I tell my audiences, when I'm doing a presentation, which is, it's all funny, but there's info that you walk away with, is everybody has a different POV, point of view. You may have been raised that the kitchen has to be spotless. You may have been raised that, the way I was, military, you know, when you get out of bed, you make the bed. Doesn't have to be perfect, but you at least kind of fluff the pillows a little bit, throw the covers up over the pillow, kind of punch it so that when you come back into the bedroom, the bed is already made, and it makes the room look neater. It only takes a few minutes, not even that. So everyone has the thing that's important to them, and I have a feeling yours is the can opener.
It could be, but here's what I was just thinking, and this leads us into recipes, which we have 13 minutes. But this is how, you know, two friends get talking. This is what happens. I have an idea for this holiday season, which is fast approaching.
Yes.
Because I adamantly and vehemently despise fruitcake. My belief is that there really are only about 10 fruitcakes in the world, and people just pass them around. So, here is what I have decided, because this has become a thing here at the radio station.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Because we have a gentleman here who does a show, and he loves fruitcake, and I can't stand it. So, what I have decided to do this year is I am going to take it upon myself. See, this is where you could come in handy. Boy, if you were here for this, this would be big. Because my belief is that I could create, because it sounds good. I like fruit. I like cake.
Mm-hmm.
They should work. So, I am going to try to create a fruit cake muffin. Oh, yes. For the holiday season. That tastes good. Not these fruitcakes that I've been dealing with in the past. And
you mean the ones that if you needed a brick, you were fixing your wall, you could put the fruitcake in there and
put it right in there.
Suffice, yeah.
Yeah. I want to make it fluffy and actually taste like fruit and not wax lips. And I think we'll be able to sell these to the masses. For the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's coming up for me. This is what's on my agenda for the holiday of 2018. And boy, we could just have seminars on the fruitcake. I think, you know, it'd be a fascinating thing.
Well, I happen to like them. Now, the key is you don't slice it an inch thick and expect to eat the whole thing. A fruitcake, by definition, you know, there's more of that fruit, the candied fruit, really, the dried candied fruit, than there is the cake. So if you think of it in that terms, and you eat just a little bit, it has a nice taste. Is it the taste that you don't care for, or is it just you grew up and fruitcakes were not good?
I don't think I have a horror story about fruitcakes. I just don't like the taste. I think I'd rather deal with can openers for 6 months than even take a bite of the fruitcake.
Scott, you're so funny.
Well, it all leads to the central problem that if I make these fruitcake muffins, I think I'm going to have to deal with cans.
Well, yes, most likely, or bags of the dried fruit, and then depending on what the cake part of it is. Now, here's something one of my readers sent in several years ago, and it was about the fruitcake thing. And she kind of said what you said, you know, that the cake part of a fruitcake can be very spicy, sometimes too much spice. Cinnamon, nutmeg, you know, that kind of thing. Touch of cloves is she did the cake part with just a regular cake mix and would do it in muffin tins. So that really what you were getting was the candied fruit with a regular cake mix. And doing it in muffin tins, you only have a little bit. You can cut them in half. And by the way, fruitcake does travel well all across the country. And I'm sorry. I just have this vision, Scott. So if I ever want to blackmail you or torture you, I'm going to put you in a room with a chair and a table, water, and a fruitcake and a knife. Would that torture you?
Well, it would, because I think the fruit... And I'm not sure about this fruitcake traveling well, because I think if I put a fruitcake in, like, the trunk, I think my car suspension would break.
Well, yes. Well, and, you know, part of it, too, is in the old days, to preserve the fruitcake, you know, they've made it, you've eaten a little bit of it, was to sprinkle it with, I think, was it rum or brandy?
Oh, I can see that.
It was rum or brandy to help sort of preserve it. Well, for teetotalers, or if you were a real Baptist and lived in the South where I live, you know, well, I'm just going to have another little slice of fruitcake.
Oh, that's, well, you know, see, here's the thing. At Christmas, in recent years, and I am not a drinker, as they would say, you know, if people drink, that's fine, whatever you'd like to do, just don't drive. But I'm not a drinker. But recently, during Christmas, because I do like eggnog, and we have had some get-togethers here at the radio station, parties. We have the Christmas party, and then we have Christmas Eve, because we're on the air that morning. And we have taken to having eggnog and Christmas cookies, and there usually is a fruitcake around for the people who like that sort of thing. And but people in recent years have been putting a little something in the eggnog.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always a little different. I mean, it's not the same thing going in every year. But it tastes okay.
Well, now that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and I make, in fact, I think it's in this, in the Kitchen with Heloise book, I make a lighter version of eggnog. Now, I'm a gal who's been watching her weight since I was in high school. You know, egg is a lighter version of eggnog. Instead of using heavy cream, I'll do 2% milk and then the rest of the ingredients, and they have an extract that is imitation rum, and you can put a couple drops of that in there and you get the flavor. It's not as thick and rich and creamy as real eggnog, but during the holiday season, it suffices for me.
You know, I don't think I could even attempt to make eggnog at home. It sounds it just sounds difficult.
It's not that difficult, Scott.
Really?
But that's okay.
Oh no, it's just to me that sounds like. Now I'm willing to try complicated things, but I get the impression that eggnog you would make for more than just one cup, and if I did it, you know, there could be some problems because other people would have to drink it as well. And I don't, it's, you know, it's like deviled eggs. If you get it wrong, you get it really wrong. That's what it sounds like to me.
Scott, you know, have you told your listeners that I'm going to be on once a month?
Yes.
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 Okay. The third Wednesday of every month. So I think what we're going to start doing is we're going to do a hint specifically for Scott.
Oh. We'll never run out?
We'll never run out, and I'll teach you, every time we start at the top of the show, something simple that you can do. Deviled eggs are not that difficult to make. It's you hard cook the eggs. Now, technically, here's the Heloise hint. The technical term, because I've worked with the American Egg Board for a long time, you know, the technical term is hard cooked, because you really are not supposed to boil the eggs. You don't want the eggs bouncing around in the pan. That's really not what you're supposed to do, but a lot of people do it that way. So first, you want room temperature eggs. So if the eggs are in the refrigerator, take them out, open the lid, let them sit till the egg itself is room temp. Then you put them in the pan to cover the bottom. Fill it with water, and they say 2 inches. I say give it 2 to 3 inches till the water's above the eggs. You put them on the stove. You bring the water to a boil, and you'll see. A boil means, and I've got the definition in the book, you'll see it's a rolling boil. If you look at the pan, you'll see the water actually kind of starts to roll and bubble. That's a rolling boil. Then remove the pan from the heat, particularly if you have gas, you turn the gas off, there's no more heat, so you don't have to worry about that. If it's electric, when you turn an electric burner off, it still continues to have heat until it cools down, which could be a minute or two. So, and then you put the lid on, and you leave it for a minimum, depending on how many eggs, of I think it's 17 to 18 minutes. Now, here's the fun one that I love doing. I've done this on television. There's a photo of me somewhere on the internet. Is then you pour carefully the water off into the sink till the pan is empty. You've got the eggs in. And then you shake the pan, and it's going to crack or crackle the eggs. Then you fill it with cool water. I have been known to, in a hurry, couple handfuls of ice cubes in there, so you've gone from boiling temperature to not quite freezing, but you know, with the ice cubes and the cold water, the eggshell is already cracked a little bit, so it causes the membrane that is around the egg part to kind of shrink. And if they're older eggs, which is better to use for hard cooked eggs, is the peel will come right off. And the other hint, as I just said, is if you know you're going to make hard-cooked eggs, deviled eggs, is the older the egg, the better. A fresh egg doesn't have much of an air pocket. So the older egg, because the eggshell itself is porous. I mean, not horrifically, but it is porous. So the older the egg, it kind of shrinks a little bit, and therefore, it's much easier to peel.
Well, see, that's where I run into trouble, because what happens to me is I get to the point, I can boil the egg, and I can get it to the point where it needs to be, but I cannot get the shell off, so what I end up doing is smashing the egg, and then I just take the stuff inside the egg, the yolk, and I make the I don't even know what that is called, the deviled egg. Is there a term for that yellow stuff you put in there with the mustard and
it's
the mayo?
It's called a yolk.
But is it called a yolk when you add the
oh, you mean once I, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
what,
so
you
I don't
mean once you take the yolks and mash them up and then add either mayonnaise, a little bit of mustard. You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's the filling?
The filling. And I just eat the filling. So okay. That's what happens.
All right, Scott. Here is your Heloise assignment for the next time I'm on the air with you. Third Wednesday of every month is go home, use the older eggs, boil them or hard cook them the way I told you. Be sure that there's ice, cold water. And now also to make it easier to peel is to, you want to peel them under running water. Doesn't have to be a full blast, but under running water. And then the water will sort of get in there where that membrane is, and it makes it easier to peel.
I'm going to try this. We've got a month now. I'm going to work on this. And I want, and maybe I'll have a working can opener by the next time we talk too. But I do want to remind people, I haven't reminded people, Heloise.com is a good place to go on the internet to get all kinds of useful information. And don't forget, Heloise is here with us, and we could not be happier every third Wednesday from 12:15 to 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Heloise, it's always my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And I look forward to next month.
Absolutely. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Coming back in about 15 minutes with Orson Bean.
About Ernie Borgnine. Now you keep asking me all these questions. It's a good thing you're not here. Probably asked me to take off shirts or something.
And